I'm as much at the mercy of the company's leadership as Juniper. She might be the most talented dancer I've ever seen, and the hardest working, but she's going up against a well-entrenched power structure. The people in charge don't appreciate being called out for what they truly are. But I get why you want to help her. Kira shouldered her duffel and aimed for the double doors of the studio. I want to help her too. But Juniper made her choice this spring. She has to face the consequences. Bryce stared after her for a minute, the doors to the studio banging shut. As she stood alone in the sunny space, the silence pressed on her. She looked to the spot where Juniper had been demonstrating those fouettés. Bryce pulled out her phone and did a quick search. A moment later, she was dialing. I'd like to speak to Director Gorgon, please. Bryce tapped her feet again as the CCB receptionist spoke. She clenched her fingers into fists before she answered. Tell him that Her Royal Highness, Princess Bryce Dannon, is calling. Push-ups bored Hunt to tears, if it hadn't been for the earbuds playing the last few chapters of the book he was listening to. He might have fallen asleep during his workout on the training roof of the Comitium. The morning sun baked his back, his arms, his brow, sweat dripping onto the concrete floors. He had a vague awareness of people watching, but kept going. 361, 362. A shadow fell across him, blocking out the sun. He found the harpy smirking down at him, her dark hair fluttering in the wind. And those black wings? Well, that's why there was no more sun.
What?
He asked on an exhale, keeping up his momentum.
The pretty one wants to see you.
Her sharp voice was edged with cruel amusement.
Her name is Celestina,
Hunt grunted, getting to 370 before hopping to his feet. The harpy's gaze slid down his bare torso, and he crossed his arms.
You're her messenger now?
I'm Ephraim's messenger, and since he just finished fucking her, I was the closest one to retrieve you.
Hunt held in his cringe.
Fine.
He caught Isaiah's attention from across the ring and motioned that he was leaving. His friend, in the middle of his own exercises, waved a farewell. He didn't bother waving to Baxian, despite his help last night, and Pollux hadn't come up to the ring for their private hour of training. He was presumably still in bed with the hind. Naomi had waited for him for 30 minutes before bailing and going to inspect her own troops. Hunt stepped toward the glass doors into the building, wiping the sweat from his brow, but the harpy followed him. He sneered over a shoulder.
Bye.
She gave him a slashing grin.
I'm to escort you back.
Hunt stiffened. This couldn't be good. His body going distant, he kept walking, aiming for the elevators. If he sent a warning message to Bryce right now, would she have enough time to flee the city? Unless they'd already come for her. The harpy trailed him like a wraith.
Your little disappearing act last night is going to bite you in the ass, she crooned,
stepping into the elevator with him. Right, that. He tried not to look too relieved as the acid in his veins eased. That had to be why Celestina was summoning him, a chewing out for bad behavior he could deal with. If only the harpy knew what he'd really been up to lately. So Hunt leaned against the far wall of the elevator, contemplating how he'd best like to kill her. A lightning strike to the head would be swift, but not as satisfying as plunging his sword into her gut and twisting as he drove upward. The harpy tucked in her black wings. She'd been built wiry and long, her face narrow and eyes a bit too large for her features. She went on.
You always did think more with your cock than your head.
One of my most winning attributes.
He wouldn't let her bait him. She had done it before, when they'd both served Sandriel, and he'd always paid for it. Sandriel had never once punished the female for the brawls that had left his skin shredded. He'd always been the one to take the flaying afterward for disturbing the peace. The harpy stepped onto the governor's floor like a dark wind.
You'll get what's coming to you, Athalar.
Likewise.
He trailed her to the double doors of Celestina's public office. She halted outside, knocking once. Celestina murmured her welcome, and Hunt stepped into the room, shutting the door on the harpy's pinched face. The archangel, robed in sky blue today, was immaculate, glowing. If she'd been kept up all night with Ephraim, she didn't reveal it. Or any emotion, really, as Hunt stopped before her desk and said, "You asked for me?" He took a casual stance, legs apart, hands behind his back, wings high but loose. Celestina straightened a golden pen on her desk.
"Was there an emergency last night?"
"Yes, no."
"A private matter."
"And you saw fit to prioritize that over assisting me?"
"Fuck.
You seemed to have the situation under control."
Her lips thinned.
"I had hoped that when you promised to have my back, it would be for the entire night, not for an hour."
"I'm sorry," he said, and meant it. "If it had been for anything else."
"I'm assuming it had to do with Miss Quinlan."
"Yeah."
"And are you aware that you, as one of my triari, chose to assist a princess of the Fae instead of your governor?"
"It wasn't for anything political."
"That was not how my mate perceived it. He asked why two of my triari had ditched our private celebration. If they thought so little of me, of him, that they could leave without permission to help a Fae royal."
Hunt ran his hands through his hair.
"I'm sorry, Celestina. I really am."
"I'm sure you are." Her voice was distant. "This shall not happen again."
"Or what?" he almost asked, but he said,
"It won't."
"I want you staying in the barracks for the next 2 weeks."
"What?"
Hunt supposed he could always quit, but what the fuck would he do with himself then? Celestina's gaze was steely.
"After that time, you may return to Miss Quinlan. But I think you need a reminder of your priorities. And I'd like you to fully commit to helping Baxian adjust."
She shuffled some papers on her desk.
"You're dismissed."
2 weeks here, without Quinlan, without getting to touch her, fuck her, lie next to her.
Celestina.
Goodbye.
Despite his outrage, his frustration, he looked at her, really looked. She was alone. Alone and like a ray of sunshine in a sea of darkness. He should have had her back last night. But if it was between her and Bryce, he'd always, always pick his mate, no matter what it cost him. Which was apparently 2 weeks without Bryce. But he asked,
"How'd it go with Ephraim?
You don't look too happy for a female who recently bedded her mate." Her head snapped up. Again, that distance in her eyes that told him he'd been shut out before she even said,
"That's a private matter, to use your words."
"Fine.
I'll be around today if you need me."
He aimed for the door, but added, "Why send the harpy to get me?" Her caramel eyes shuddered.
"Ephraim thought she might be the most effective."
"Ephraim, huh?"
"He is my mate."
"But not your master."
Power glowed along her wings, her tightly curling hair.
"Careful, Hunt."
"Noted."
Hunt strode into the hall, wondering if he'd done something to piss off Erd.
2 weeks here.
With all the shit happening with Bryce and the rebels and Cormac. Fuck. As if the mere thought of the word rebels had summoned her, he found the hind leaning against the far wall. There was no sign of the harpy. The hind's beautiful face was serene, though her golden eyes seemed lit with hellfire.
"Hello, Hunt."
"Here to interrogate me?"
Hunt aimed for the elevator that would take him back to the training ring. He kept his pace casual, arrogant, utterly unfazed. Even if Dannon had been freaked out by her, Hunt had seen and dealt with Lydia Servos enough to know which buttons to push, which to avoid, and that if he got her away from Mordok, from Pollux, from her entire Dreadwolf retinue, he'd leave her in smoking ruin. Fancy that, she was alone right now. The hind knew it too.
That was what made her dangerous. She might appear unarmed, vulnerable, but she carried herself like someone who might whisper a word and have death fly to defend her, who might snap her fingers and unleash hell upon him. He'd been in Sandriel's possession when the Hind had signed on, recruited by the Archangel herself to serve as her spymaster. Lydia had been so young, barely into her 20s. She'd just made the drop, and had no apparent deep well of magic, other than her swiftness as a deer shifter and her love of cruelty. Her appointment to such a high position had been a blaring alarm to stay the fuck away from her. She was a Vaneer who'd cross any line if she pleased Sandriel so greatly. Pollux had courted her almost immediately. "What the fuck do you want?" Hunt asked, stabbing the elevator button. He blocked any thought of Ophion, of Emile, of their activities from his mind. He was nothing but the Umbra Mortis, loyal to the Empire.
"You're friends with Rune Danon, are you not?"
Burning fucking Solas. Hunt kept his face neutral. "I wouldn't say he's a friend, but yeah, we hang out."
"And Ethan Holstrom?"
Hunt shrugged. "Calm, stay calm. He's a decent guy."
"And what of Therian Keddos?"
Hunt made himself blow out a loud sigh. It served to loosen the growing tightness in his chest. "Isn't it a little early for interrogating?" Fuck, had she gone after Bryce already? Was one of her goons, Mordok even, at the apartment while she cornered Hunt here, at the elevator? The Hind smiled without showing her teeth.
"I woke up refreshed this morning."
"I didn't realize fucking Pollux is so boring that you could sleep through it." She snickered to his surprise.
"Sandriel might have done so much more with you, if she'd only had the vision for it."
"Too bad she liked gambling more than torturing me." He could only thank the gods that Sandriel had gotten so buried in her debts that she'd had to sell him to Micah to pay them off.
"Too bad she's dead."
Those golden eyes gleamed. Yeah, the Hind knew who was responsible for that death. The elevator opened, and Hunt stepped in, the Hind following him. "So why the questions about my friends? How much time would he have to warn them? Or would all of them fleeing the city confirm that they were guilty?"
"I thought they were merely people you hung out with."
"Semantics." Her small, bland smile raked down Hunt's temper.
"An unusual group, even in a city as progressive as Lunathian. An angel, a wolf, a fey prince, a mare, and a half-human whore."
Hunt growled at the last word, rage shaking him from his dread.
"It sounds like the start to a bad joke."
"You want to ask me something, Lydia? Then fucking say it. Don't waste my time." The elevator opened into the hall of the training floor, bringing the scent of sweat.
"I'm merely observing an anomaly, wondering what might be so compelling that so many people of power from different species and houses are hanging out at Bryce Quinlan's apartment."
"She's got one hell of a video gaming system." The Hind chuckled, the sound laced with menace.
"I'll find out, you know. I always do."
"I look forward to it," Hunt said, stalking toward the doors. A dark figure loomed ahead of them, Baxian. His eyes were on the Hind, stony and yet seeking. She stopped short. The Hind stopped short. Baxian said, "Lydia?" The Hind replied flatly,
"Baxian."
"I was looking for you." He inclined his head to Hunt in dismissal. He'd take over from here.
"Is it to explain why you vanished into the night with Hunt Athalar?"
she asked, folding her hands behind her back in a perfect imperial stance, a good little soldier. Hunt passed Baxian. "Not a word," Hunt said so softly it was barely more than a breath. Baxian nodded subtly. Hunt had barely pushed open the doors to the training area when he heard Baxian say carefully to the Hind, as if remembering who she was, "I don't answer to you." Her voice was smooth as silk.
"Not to me,
or Ephraim, but you still answer to the Asteri, her true masters, whose will is mine.
Hunt's stomach churned. She was right. And he'd do well to remember it before it was too late. Chapter 38.
This is a dumb fucking idea.
You really love to say that, Legs. Bryce peered at the two-story iron doors in the back alley of the old square, the surface embossed with stars and planets and all manner of heavenly objects.
There's a reason no one comes to the Mystics anymore.
Hell, she'd suggested it while working on Danica's case this spring, but Hunt had convinced her not to come.
The Mystics are some dark, fucked-up shit, he'd said.
Bryce glowered at Therian and Ethan, standing behind her in the alley.
I mean it.
What's behind those doors is not for the faint of heart. Jessica knows this guy, but even she doesn't mess with him. Ethan countered.
I can't think of another alternative. The Oracle only sees the future, not present. I need to know what's going on with Connor.
Therian drawled.
If you can't stomach it, Legs, then sit out here on the curb.
She sighed through her nose, trying again.
Only lowlifes use the Mystics these days.
They'd had this conversation twice already on the walk over. She was likely going to lose this round as well. But it was worth a shot. If Hunt had been with her, he'd have gotten his point across in that alpha hole way of his. But he hadn't answered his phone. He'd probably give her hell for coming here without him. Bryce sighed to the baking hot sky.
All right, let's get this over with.
That's the spirit, Legs. Therian clapped her on the back. Ethan frowned at the doors. Bryce reached for the door chime, a crescent moon dangling from a delicate iron chain. She yanked it once, twice, and off-kilter ringing echoed.
This is a really bad idea, she muttered again.
Yeah, yeah, Ethan said, tipping his head back to study the building.
The tattoo of Amelie's pack was glaringly dark in the sun. She wondered if he wanted to tear the flesh off and start anew. Bryce set the question aside, as one of the planets carved in the door, the five-ringed behemoth that was Thur, swung away, revealing a pale gray eye.
Appointment.
Therian held up his BCIU badge.
The Blue Court requires your assistance.
Does it now?
A croaking laugh as that eye, eerily sharp despite the wrinkles around it, fixed on the mare. It narrowed in amusement or pleasure.
One of the river folk. What a treat. What a treat.
The planet slammed shut, and Therian stepped onto the slate front step as the doors cracked open a sliver. Cold air rippled out, along with the tang of salt and the smothering dampness of mold. Ethan trailed Bryce, swearing under his breath at the scent. She twisted, throwing him a reproachful glare. He winced, falling into step beside her with that sunball player's grace as they entered the cavernous space beyond. A gray-robed old male stood before them. Not human, but his scent declared nothing other than some sort of veneer humanoid. His heavy white beard fell to the thin band of rope that served as a belt, his wispy hair long and unbound. Four rings of silver and gold glinted on one of his withered spotted hands, with small stars blazing in the center of each, trapped in the nearly invisible glass domes.
No, not stars.
Bryce's stomach turned over at the minuscule hand that pressed against the other side of the glass. There was no mistaking the desperation in that touch.
Fire sprites, enslaved, all of them, bought and sold.
Bryce struggled to keep from ripping that hand clean off the arm that bore it. She could feel Ethan watching her, feel him trying to puzzle out why she'd gone so still and stiff. But she couldn't tear her gaze from the sprites.
It is not every day that one of the mare crosses my doorstep,
the old male said, his smile revealing two white teeth, still intact despite his age. Unless they'd come from someone else.
Let alone in the company of a wolf and a fae.
Bryce gripped her purse, mastering her temper, and lifted her chin. We need to consult your... She peered past his bony shoulder to the dim space beyond. Services. And then I'll take all four of those rings and smash them open.
I shall be honored.
The male bowed at the waist to Therian, but didn't bother to extend the courtesy to Bryce and Ethan.
This way.
Bryce kept a hand within casual distance of the knife in her purse as they entered the dimness. She wished she had the reassuring weight and strength of Danica's sword, but the blade would have stood out too much. The space consisted of two levels, bookshelves crammed with tomes and scrolls rising to the dark-veiled ceiling, an iron ramp winding up the walls in a lazy spiral. A great golden orb dangled in the center of the room, lit from within. And beneath them, in tubs built into the slate floor. To her left, Ethan sucked in a breath. Three mystics slept, submerged in greenish, cloudy water, breathing masks strapped to their faces. Their white shifts floated around them, doing little to hide the skeletal bodies beneath. One male, one female, one both. That was how it always was, how it always had been. Perfect balance. Bryce's stomach turned over again. She knew the sensation wouldn't stop until she left.
May I interest you in a hot tea before we begin the formalities?
The old male asked Therian, gesturing to a thick oak table to the right of the ramp's base. We're pressed for time, Ethan lied, stepping up to Therian's side. Fine, let them deal with the old creep. Ethan set a pile of gold marks on the table with a clink. If that doesn't cover the cost, give me the bill for the remainder. That drew Bryce's attention. Ethan spoke with such authority. She'd heard him talk to his teammates as their captain, had seen him in command plenty. But the Ethan she'd known these past few days had been subdued.
Of course, of course.
The male's filmy eyes swept around the room.
I can have my beauties up and running within a few minutes.
He hobbled toward the walkway and braced a hand on the iron rail as he began the ascent. Bryce glanced back to the three mystics in their tubs, their thin bodies, their pale, soggy skin. Built into the floor beside them was a panel covered in a language she had never seen.
Pay them no heed, miss,
the old male called, still winding his way toward a platform about halfway up the room, filled with dials and wheels.
When they're not in use, they drift. Where they go and what they see is a mystery, even to me.
It wasn't that the mystics could see all worlds. No, the gift wasn't the unnerving thing. It was what they gave up for it. Life. True life. Bryce heard Therian swallow. She refrained from snapping that she'd warned him 10 fucking times.
The families are compensated handsomely,
the old male said, as if reciting from a script designed to calm skittish patrons. He reached the controls and began flipping switches. Gears groaned, and a few more lights flickered on in the tanks, further illuminating the mystic's bodies.
If that is of any concern to you.
Another switch flipped, and Bryce staggered back a step as a full holographic replica of their solar system exploded into view, orbiting the dangling sun in the center of the space. Therian blew out what she could only assume was an impressed breath. Ethan scanned above them, like he could find his brother in that map. Bryce didn't wait for them before trailing the old male up the walkway, as the seven planets aligned themselves perfectly, stars glittering in the far reaches of the room. She couldn't keep the sharpness from her voice as she asked, "Do their families ever see them?" She really had no right to demand these answers. She'd been complicit in coming here, in using their services.
"It would be upsetting for both parties,"
the male said distantly, still working his switches. What's your name? Bryce advanced up the ramp. Therian murmured, Legs. She ignored the warning. Ethan kept quiet. Yet the old male replied, utterly unfazed.
Some people call me the astronomer.
She couldn't keep the bite from her voice. What do other people call you? The astronomer didn't answer. Up and up, Bryce ascended into the heavens, Therian and Ethan trailing her, like the assholes were second-guessing this. One of the mystics twitched, water splashing.
A normal reaction, the astronomer said,
not even looking up from his dials as they approached.
Everyone is always so concerned for their well-being. They made the choice, you know. I didn't force them into this, he sighed. To give up life in the waking world, to glimpse wonders of the universe that no Vanir or mortal shall ever see.
Stroking his beard, he added,
this trio is a good one. I've had them for a while now with no issues. The last group, one drifted too far. Too far and for too long. They dragged the others with them. Such a waste.
Bryce tried to block out the excuses. Everyone knew the truth. The mystics came from all races and were usually poor. So poor that when they were born with the gift, their families sold them to people like the astronomer, who exploited their talent until they died, alone in those tubs, or wandered so deep into the cosmos they couldn't find their way back to their minds. Bryce clenched her hands into fists. Micah had allowed it to happen. Her piece-of-shit father turned a blind eye, too. As Autumn King, he had the ability to put an end to this practice, or, at the least, advocate to stop it, but he didn't. Bryce set aside her outrage and waved a hand to the drifting planets.
This space map, it is called an orrery.
This orrery, Bryce approached the male's side. It's tech, not magic?
Can it not be both?
Bryce's fingers curled into fists, but she said, a murky memory rippling from her childhood, the Autumn King has one in his private study. The astronomer clicked his tongue.
Yes, and a fine one at that. Made by craftsmen in a Valen long ago. I haven't had the privilege to see it, but I hear it is as precise as mine, if not more so.
What's the point of it? She asked.
Only one who does not feel the need to peer into the cosmos would ask such a thing. The orrery helps us answer the most fundamental questions. Who are we? Where do we come from?
When Bryce didn't say anything more, Therian cleared his throat. We'll be quick with our own questions, then.
Each one will be billed, of course.
Of course, Ethan said through his teeth, stopping at Bryce's side. He peered through the planets to the mystics floating beneath. Does my brother, Connor Holstrom, remain in the Bone Quarter, or has his soul passed through the Dead Gate? The astronomer whispered,
Luna above.
He fiddled with one of the faintly glowing rings atop his hand.
This question requires a riskier method of contact than usual, one that borders on the illegal. It will cost you,
Bryce said. How much? Scam artist bullshit.
Another 100 gold marks.
Bryce started, but Ethan said, done. She turned to warn him not to spend one more coin of the considerable inheritance his parents had left him, but the astronomer hobbled toward a metal cabinet beneath the dials and opened its small doors. He pulled out a bundle wrapped in canvas. Bryce stiffened at the moldy, rotten earth scent that crept from the bundle as he unfolded the fabric to reveal a handful of rust-colored salt.
What the fuck is that? Ethan asked.
Blood salt.
Bryce breathed. Therian looked to her in question, but she didn't bother to explain more. Blood for life, blood for death. It was summoning salt infused with the blood from a laboring mother's sex and blood from a dying male's throat. The two great transitions of a soul in and out of this world. But to use it here.
You can't mean to add that to their water, Bryce said to the astronomer.
The old male hobbled back down the ramp.
Their tanks already contain white salts. The blood salt will merely pinpoint their surge.
Therian muttered to Bryce, You might be right about this place.
Now you agree with me?
She whisper yelled as the astronomer sprinkled the red salt into the three tanks. The water clouded and then turned rust-colored, like the mystics were now submerged in blood. Ethan murmured,
This isn't right.
Then let's take our money and go,
she urged. But the astronomer returned, and Therian asked,
Is it safe for the mystics to contact the resting dead?
The astronomer typed on the pad mounted on a gold-plated lectern fashioned after an exploding star, then hit a black button on a panel nearby.
Oh, yes. They do love to talk, have nothing else to do with their time.
He shot Bryce a sharp glare, gray eyes gleaming like cold knives.
As for your money, there is a no refunds policy, says so right there on the wall. You might as well stay to hear your answer.
Before Bryce could respond, the floor below slid away, leaving the mystics in their tubs, and creating a considerable gap between the base of the ramp and the entryway. The tubs rested atop narrow columns, rising from a sublevel lined with more books, and another walkway descending down, down, to a black pit in the center of the floor. And filling the sublevel, layer after layer of darkness revealed itself, each one blacker than the last. Seven of them, one for each level of hell.
From the highest stars to the pit itself.
The astronomer sighed and typed again into the pad.
Their search may take a while, even with the blood salt.
Bryce sized up the gap between the base of the ramp and the entryway. Could she jump it? Ethan definitely could. Therian, too. She found Therian watching her with crossed arms.
Just enjoy the show, Legs.
She scowled.
I think you've lost the right to call me that after this.
Ethan said quietly, face pained.
Bryce, I know this sucks. This is not okay.
His voice turned hoarse.
But if it's the only way to learn what's going on with Connor.
She opened her mouth to snap that Connor would have condemned this place and told Ethan to find some other way, but she could see him, Connor, shining right there in Ethan's face. In his eyes, the same hue, and in those broad shoulders. Her throat ached. What line wouldn't she cross to help Connor and the pack of devils? They would have done the same for her. Connor might have condemned this place, but if their positions were reversed. Therian jerked his chin to the exit far below.
Go ahead, princess. We'll see you later.
Fuck you,
Bryce snapped. She braced her feet apart.
Let's get this over with.
From the corner of her eye, she saw Ethan's shoulders sag. In relief or shame, she didn't know. The old male cut in, as if he hadn't heard a word of their hissed argument.
Most astronomers and mystics have been put out of business these days, you know, thanks to fancy tech and self-righteous busybodies like you.
He spat toward Bryce. She snarled at him, the sound more primal fey than she liked. But he waved that hateful ring-encrusted hand toward the mystics in their pools.
They were the original interweb. Any answer you wish to know, they can find it, without having to wade through the slog of nonsense out there.
The female mystic twitched, dark hair floating around her in the suspension pool, black tendrils among the red salt. Dried salt water crusted the slate rim of the tub, as if she'd thrashed earlier and soaked the stones. Salt for buoyancy, and to protect them from the demons and beings they spied on or conversed with. But would those protections fade with the blood salt in the water? The mystic who was both male and female jolted, their long limbs flailing.
Oh,
the astronomer observed, scanning the pad.
They're going far this time, very far,
he nodded to Bryce.
That was high-quality blood salt, you know.
For 100 marks it had better be, Ethan said. But his attention remained on the mystics below, his breathing shallow. Another push of a button, and the holographic planets began to shift, becoming smaller as they drifted away. The sun rose into the ceiling, vanishing, and distant stars came into view, different planets.
The mystics made the first star maps, the astronomer said. They charted more extensively than anyone had before. In the Eternal City, I heard they have 1,000 mystics in the palace catacombs, mapping farther and farther into the cosmos, speaking with creatures we shall never know.
Hunt had been in those catacombs, their dungeons specifically. Had he ever heard a whisper of this? Something beeped on the screen, and Bryce motioned toward it. What's that?
The mail is reaching Hell's orbit,
the astronomer clicked his tongue.
He's much faster today. Impressive.
Connor's soul wound up in Hell? Horror laced Ethan's every word. Bryce's throat closed up. It wasn't possible. How would that have even happened? Had she done something with the gate this spring that had transported his soul over there? Silence fell. The temperature dropping with it, she demanded. Why is it getting colder?
Sometimes their powers manifest the environment they're encountering.
Before anyone replied, the astronomer twisted a brass dial.
What do you see? What do you hear?
The male twitched again, red water splashing over the edge of the tub and dribbling into the pit beneath. Therion peered over the iron rail. His lips are turning blue.
The water is warm,
the astronomer tutted.
Look,
he pointed to the screen. A graph of rising and falling lines, like sound waves, appeared.
I'll admit the new tech has some advantages. The old way of transcribing was much harder. I had to reference every single brainwave to find the correlation to the right letter or word. Now the machine just does it for me.
I don't care about brainwaves, Bryce thought. Tell me what's happening with Connor. But the astronomer rambled on almost absent-mindedly.
When you speak, your brain sends a message to your tongue to form the words. This machine reads that message, that signal, and interprets it without you needing to say a word.
So it's a mind reader, Therion said, face pale in the lights. Bryce drifted closer to Ethan. The wolf radiated dread.
Of a sort, the astronomer said. Right now, it is more of an eavesdropper, listening to the conversation the mystic is having with whoever is on the other end of the line.
Therion asked, hands behind his back as he peered at the machines. How does it know what the other person is saying?
The mystic is trained to repeat back the words so that we may transcribe them.
The screen began to flash a series of letters, words.
Too dark, the astronomer read. It is too dark to see, only hear.
Can you pinpoint where in hell your mystic is? Ethan indicated the holographic levels far below.
Not precisely. But judging by the cold, I'd say deep. Perhaps the chasm itself.
Bryce and Ethan swapped glances. His eyes were as wide as her own. The astronomer kept reading.
Hello.
Silence. Nothing but endless silence.
This is very common,
the astronomer assured them, gesturing them to move closer. Despite herself, despite her objections, Bryce leaned in to read the feed. The mystic said, I am searching for the soul of a wolf called Connor Holstrom. Someone, something answered. No wolves have roamed these lands for eons. No wolf by that name dwells here, living or dead. But what are you? Ethan shuddered, swaying a step. With relief, Bryce realized, because that was the dizzying, rushing sensation in her body, too.
Strange,
the astronomer said.
Why were we drawn to hell if your friend isn't there?
Bryce didn't want to know, tried and failed to open her mouth to say they should go.
I am a mystic,
the male said.
From where? A faraway place. Why are you here?
To ask questions.
Will you oblige me? If I can, mystic, then I shall.
What is your name? A pause, then.
Thanatos.
Bryce sucked in a sharp breath.
The Prince of the Ravine.
Therian fell back a step. Do you know if Connor Holstrom remains in the bone quarter of Midgard? A long, long pause, the sound waves flatlining. Then,
who sent you here?
A wolf, a mare, and a half-fey, half-human female. How the mystics had known of their presence, Bryce had no idea. Didn't want to know what sort of perception they possessed while in those isolation tanks. Thanatos asked,
What are their names?
I do not know. Will you answer my questions? Another long pause.
We need to stop this.
Ethan nodded toward the male's tub. Ice was beginning to inch over the water.
They are listening, are they?
Yes. Again, silence. And then the demon prince said,
Let me see them. Let them see me.
The mystic's eyes flew open in the tank below. Chapter 39. A shuddering inhale was the only sign of discomfort Bryce would allow herself, as she stared at the hologram displayed in the center of the orrery, the male now contained inside its dark border. Thanatos's tightly curled black hair was cropped close to his head, displaying the handsome, unsmiling face above the powerful body bedecked in dark, ornate armor. He gazed right at Bryce, as if he could indeed see through the mystic's eyes. The astronomer fell back a step, murmuring a prayer to Luna. The feed kept going, in time to Thanatos's moving mouth. Hunger filled the demon's expression.
I can smell the starlight on you.
The Prince of the Ravine knew her, somehow. The astronomer took another step back, then another, until he was pressed against the wall behind him, shaking in terror. Thanatos's dark eyes pierced to her soul.
You're the one my brothers speak about.
Ethan and Therian glanced between her and the demon, hands within easy reach of their weapons, little as they could do. I came to ask about a friend's soul. I don't know why I'm talking to you, Bryce said, and added a bit quietly, Your Highness.
I am a prince of death. Souls bow to me.
This male had none of Adas's slickness, or what Hunt had told her of Apollyon's smug arrogance, nothing that indicated mercy or humor. Ethan blurted, teeth clattering with the cold. Can you tell me if Connor Holstrom's soul somehow got lost in hell? Thanatos frowned at his knee-high boots, like he could see all the way down to the pit levels below.
The wolf is your brother, I take it,
he said to Ethan.
Yes,
Ethan's throat bobbed.
His soul is not in hell. He is.
His attention snapped again to Bryce, ripped away skin and bone to the being beneath.
You slew one of my creations, my beloved pet, kept for so long on your side of the crossing.
Bryce managed to ask, breath clouding in front of her.
You mean the Reapers? Or the Shepherd?
A shepherd of souls for a prince who peddled them. The Underking said you abandoned it after the first wars.
Abandoned? Or intentionally planted?
Great. Fantastic. I had no interest in being its lunch, Bryce said. Thanatos's eyes flared.
You cost me a key link to Midgard.
The shepherd reported faithfully to me on all that it heard in the bone quarter. The souls of the dead talk freely of their world.
Boo-hoo.
You mock a prince of hell. I just want answers, and to get the fuck out of here. Thanatos studied her again, as if he had all the time in the universe. Then he said,
I will give them to you, only out of respect for a warrior capable of slaying one of my creations. Shall I meet you on the battlefield, however? I will take vengeance for the shepherd's death.
Bryce's mouth dried out.
It's a date.
Connor Holstrom remains in the bone quarter. My shepherd observed him on its rounds the night before you slew it. Unless... Ah, I see now.
His eyes went distant. An order was dispatched from the dark.
He shall be left alone with the others until the usual amount of time has passed.
Who gave the order? Ethan demanded.
It is not clear.
Bryce demanded, is there a way to help souls like Connor? Whether he was ushered through the dead gate tomorrow or in 500 years, it was a horrible fate.
Only the Asteri would know.
Therion, the asshole, cut in. Can you determine the location of a human boy named Emil Renast in Lunathian? Bryce stiffened. If Apollyon was actually seeking Emil, had they just dragged another prince of hell into the hunt?
That is not how this works,
the astronomer hissed from where he still cowered by the wall.
I do not know this name or person.
Thank the gods. And thank the gods the prince's words held no hint of awareness about what Emil was, or what Apollyon might want from him. Therion drawled,
Know anyone who might? No. Those are matters of your world.
Bryce tried and failed to calm her racing heartbeat. At least Connor remained in the bone quarter, and they'd gotten a ceasefire.
Kid's a thunderbird, Therion said. Ring any bells?
Therion,
Ethan warned, apparently on the same page as Bryce.
I thought the Asteri destroyed that threat long ago.
Bryce cleared her throat. Maybe, she hedged. Why were they a threat?
I grow tired of these questions. I shall feast.
The room plunged into blackness. The astronomer whispered,
Luna, guard me, your bow bright against the darkness, your arrows like silver fire shooting into hell.
Bryce lifted a hand wreathed in starlight, casting the room in silver. In the space where Thanatos' hologram had been, only a black pit remained. The male mystic jerked violently, submerging and arching upward. Red liquid splashed. The other two lay still as death. The machine began blaring and beeping, and the astronomer halted his praying to rush to the controls.
He has snared him,
the male gasped, hands shaking. Bryce flared her light brighter as the feed began running again.
It has been a long while since a mortal fly buzzed all the way down to hell. I will taste this one's soul, as I once sipped from them like fine wine.
Frost spread over the floor. The male mystic arched again, thin arms flailing, chest rising and falling at a rapid pace.
Cut him loose, Bryce barked.
Please,
the mystic begged.
How sad and lonely and desperate you are. You taste of rainwater.
Please, please.
A little more, just a taste.
The astronomer began typing, alarms wailed.
What's happening?
Therion shouted. Down below, the ice crept over the other two mystics in their tubs. The prince continued.
You have gone too deep. I think I shall keep you.
The male thrashed, sending waves of red water cascading into the void below.
Turn off the machines, Ethan ordered.
I cannot, not without the proper extraction. His mind might shatter.
Bryce protested. He's fucked if you don't.
the Prince of the Ravine said.
I do not care for my brother's agenda. I do not heed their rules and restraints and illusions of civilization. I shall taste all of you like this, you and your masters, once the door between our worlds is again open, starting with you, Starborn.
Ice exploded across the walls, crusting over the submerged mystics. The machines groaned, planets flickering, and then every first light and piece of tech went out. Even Bryce's starlight vanished. Bryce swore.
What?
The astronomer panted in the darkness. Buttons clacked hollowly.
They're respirators.
Bryce yanked out her phone and fumbled for its light. It was dead. Another curse from Therion, and she knew his was, too. Every muscle and tendon in her body went taut. Shimmering golden light glowed from the astronomer's upraised hand. The fire sprites trapped in his rings simmered steadily. Apparently, it was all Ethan needed to see by as he launched himself over the rail and aimed for the male's iced-over tub. He landed gracefully, balancing his feet on either side. A pound of his fist had the ice cracking. The male was convulsing, no doubt drowning without a functioning respirator. Ethan hauled him up, ripping the mask from his face. A long feeding tube followed. The male gagged and spasmed, but Ethan propped him over the rim, lest he slide back under. Leaping with that athletic grace, Ethan reached the tub in the middle, freeing the mystic within, then onto the female in the third. The astronomer was shrieking, but it seemed Ethan barely heard the words. The three mystics shook, soft cries trembling from their blue mouths. Bryce shook with them, and Therion put a hand on her back. Something groaned below, and the lights sputtered back on. Metal whined. The floor began to rise, pulling toward the tubs again. The sun fixture descended from the ceiling as the astronomer hobbled down the walkway, cursing.
You had no right to pull them out. No right. They would have drowned.
Bryce launched into motion, storming after the male. Therion stalked a step behind her. The female stirred as the slate floor locked into place around the tubs. On reed-thin arms, she raised up her chest, blinking blearily at Ethan, then the room.
Back,
the mystic wheezed, her voice broken and raspy, unused for years. Her dark eyes filled with pleading.
Send me back.
The Prince of the Ravine was about to rip apart your friend's soul, Ethan said, kneeling before her.
Send me back,
she screamed, the words barely more than a hoarse screech.
Back!
Not to hell, Bryce knew. Not to the Prince of the Ravine, but into the watery, weightless existence. Ethan got to his feet, inching away.
Get out, the astronomer seethed, hurrying toward his mystics. All of you.
Bryce reached the bottom of the ramp, the astronomer's still glowing rings blazing bright. Fury boiled in her chest.
You would have sacrificed them.
Back!
The female screamed again. The other two mystics stirred to consciousness, moaning. Bryce reached Ethan's side and looped her arm through his, pulling him toward the doors. The wolf gaped at the mystics, the mess they'd made. The astronomer knelt by the female, reaching for the tubes that Ethan had ripped free.
They cannot exist in this world anymore. Do not want to exist in this world.
He glared at her, cold fire in his pale gray eyes. Bryce opened her mouth, but Therion shook his head, already heading to the exit.
Sorry for the trouble, he said over a broad shoulder.
Send me back,
the female whimpered to the astronomer. Bryce tried to hustle Ethan along, but the wolf gazed at the female, at the old male. His muscles tensed, like he might very well throw the astronomer off the girl and haul her away.
Soon,
the old male promised, stroking the young woman's wet hair.
You'll be drifting again soon, my lamb.
Each of his rings glimmered, projecting rays around the mystic's head like a corona. Bryce stopped tugging on Ethan's arm, stopped moving as she saw the pleading little hands pushing against the glass orbs on the astronomer's fingers.
do something. Be something. But what could she do? What authority did she have to free the sprites? What power could she wield beyond blinding him and snatching the rings off his fingers? She'd make it a block before the Ox or 33rd were called in. And then she'd have a fucking mess on her hands. And if Hunt was the one called to apprehend her, she knew he'd back her in an instant. But he also answered to the law. She couldn't make him choose, not to mention that they couldn't afford the scrutiny right now, in so many ways. So Bryce turned, hating herself, towing Ethan along. He didn't fight her this time. The astronomer was still murmuring to his charges when Ethan shut the heavy doors behind them. The street seemed unchanged in the light summer rain that had started. Therian's face was haunted. You were right, he admitted. It was a bad idea. Bryce opened and closed her fingers into fists. You're a fucking asshole, you know that? Therian threw her a mocking grin. You're in the gray with us, Legs. Don't get boring now that you've got a fancy crown. A low growl slipped from her throat. I always wondered why the River Queen made you her captain of intelligence. Now I know. What does that mean? Therian advanced a step, towering over her. Like hell would she back down. It means that you pretend to be Mr. Charming, but you're just a ruthless backstabber who will do anything to achieve his ends. His face hardened, became someone she didn't know, became the sort of mare that people wisely stayed away from. Try having your family at the mercy of the River Queen, and then come cry to me about morals. His voice had dropped dangerously low. My family is at the mercy of all Vanir, she snapped. Starlight flared around her, and people down the alley paused, turned their way. She didn't care, but she kept her voice whisper soft as she hissed. We're done working with you. Go find someone else to drag into your shit. She turned to Ethan for backup, but the wolf had gone pale as he gazed toward a brick wall across the alley. Bryce followed his stare and went still. She'd seen the male before them on the news and in photos, but never in the flesh. She immediately wished she still had the distance of a digital screen between them. Her starlight guttered and went out. Mordok smiled, a slash of white in the shadows. Causing trouble so early in the day.
Chapter 40. Nothing of Danica showed in Mordok's craggy face. Not one shade or curve or angle. Only, there. The way the wolf captain pushed off the wall and approached. She'd seen Danica make that movement with the same power and grace. Ethan and Therian fell into place beside her. Allies again, if only for this. What do you want, Morty? Therian drawled. Again, that irreverent, charming mare. But the wolf only sneered at Bryce. Curious for a little princess to visit a place like this. Bryce admired her nails, grateful her hands weren't shaking. I needed some questions answered. I'm getting married, after all. I want to know if there are any blemishes on my future husband's pristine reputation. A harsh laugh with too many teeth. I was warned you had a mouth on you. Bryce blew him a kiss, happy not to disappoint my fans. Ethan cut in, snarling softly. We're going. The disgraced pup, Mordok said, his chuckle like gravel. Sabine said she'd thrown you out. Looks like you landed right with the trash, eh? Or is that from lurking in so many alleys lately? Care to explain that? Bryce sighed as Ethan bristled and said, I don't know what you're talking about. Before Mordok could reply, Therian said with that winning smile, Unless you have some sort of imperial directive to interrogate us, we're done here. The wolf grinned back at him. I ran a mare male like you to shore once, drove him into a cove with a net, and learned what happens to mare when they're kept a few feet above the water for a day. What they'll do to reach one drop, so they don't lose their fins forever. What they'll give up. A muscle ticked in Therian's jaw. Bryce said, "Awesome story, dude." She looped arms with Therian, then Ethan, and hauled them down the alley with her. She might be pissed as fuck at the former, but she'd take the mayor any day over Mordok. They'd always be allies against people like him.
Danica's father.
She started shaking when they turned the block's corner, leaving Mordok in the shadows of the alley. She could only pray the astronomer was as discreet as rumor claimed, even in the face of one of the Empire's worst interrogators. They walked in silence back into the bustling heart of the old square, most of the tourists too busy snapping photos of the various decorations in honor of Celestina and Ephraim to notice them. A block away from the heart gate, Bryce halted, turning to Therian. He looked at her with a frank, cool assessment. Here was the male who'd ruthlessly ripped apart his sister's murderer, the male who had jumped right into Fury's helicopter to come help during the attack last spring.
"Aw, legs," Therian said, reading her softening features.
He reached out a hand to toy with the ends of her hair.
"You're too nice to me."
She quirked her mouth to the side. Ethan remained a few steps away and made himself busy scrolling through his phone. She said to Therian,
"I'm still mad at you."
Therian grinned crookedly.
"But you also still love me?"
She huffed a laugh.
"We didn't get answers about Emil.
Only more questions. Are you going back there?"
"No."
Therian shuddered. She believed him.
"Let me know if you come up with any ideas about where the kid might be hiding."
He tugged on her hair.
"I thought we weren't working together anymore."
"You're on probation. You can thank your abs for that." He took her face in his hands, squeezing her cheeks as he pressed a chaste kiss to her brow.
"I'll send you some photos later. Don't show Athalar."
Bryce shoved him. "Send me an otter, and we'll be even." She might not approve or agree with Therian's methods, might not entirely trust him, but they had far more dangerous enemies at their backs. Sticking together was the only choice.
"Done."
Therian flicked her nose with a long finger. He nodded at Ethan.
"Holstrom."
Then he sauntered down the street, presumably back to the Istros to check in with his queen. Alone with Ethan on the sun-baked sidewalk, Bryce asked the wolf,
"Where are you going now? Back to Runes?"
Ethan's face was shadowed, bleak.
"I guess. You're going to search for Emil?"
She pulled a postcard from her purse. Ethan's eyes brightened with recognition at her old tradition. "I'm actually sending this off to my mom." She studied her once friend as he again turned solemn.
"You all right?"
He shrugged.
"I got my answers, didn't I?"
"Yeah, but..." She rubbed at her forehead, skin sticky with the remnants of sweat from her dance class hours ago. Years ago, it seemed.
"I mean, it all sounds fine, doesn't it? Connor's in the bone quarter, and with a don't-touch order, so..."
But she could tell, from the way he paced a step, that this didn't sit well. She squeezed his shoulder.
"We'll find something. Some way to help him.
And everyone else trapped in the eternal slaughterhouse." It might have been the worst lie she'd ever told, because as Ethan left, he looked like he actually believed her.
2 weeks isn't that long, Isaiah consoled Hunt from across the glass table in the 33rd's private cafeteria in the Comitium.
They sat at the table reserved exclusively for the Triari, next to the wall-to-ceiling windows overlooking the city. Normally, Hunt didn't bother with the cafeteria, but Isaiah had invited him for an early lunch, and he'd needed to talk. He'd barely sat down when he burst out with his recap of his conversation with Celestina. Hunt bit into his turkey and brie sandwich.
"I know it's not long,"
he said around the food.
"But,"
he swallowed, turning pleading eyes to his friend.
"Bryce and I decided not to wait until winter solstice."
Isaiah burst out laughing, the sound rich and velvety. A few soldiers turned their way, then quickly resumed eating their meals. It might have bothered Hunt any other day, but today?
I'm glad you find my blue balls amusing, he hissed at his friend.
Isaiah laughed again, handsome as hell in his suit. Given how many meetings he attended with Celestina, and now Ephraim, it was a miracle from Erd that his friend had found the time today to grab lunch with him.
I never thought I'd see the day when the Umbra Mortis came crying to me about a relatively light punishment because it interferes with his sex life.
Hunt drained his water. Isaiah had a point there. Of all the punishments he'd ever been given, this was the mildest. Isaiah sobered, voice quieting.
So, what happened last night? Everything okay?
It's fine, now. Sabine came to the apartment looking for Ethan Holstrom. Bryce got spooked. I arrived in time to convince Sabine not to start shit.
Ah, Isaiah said, then asked.
And Baxian? He took it upon himself, as my so-called partner, to provide backup, however unwanted.
Isaiah snorted. Points for trying?
Hunt chuckled. Sure.
Isaiah dug into his own food, and for a moment, Hunt's chest strained with the effort of keeping every truth inside. Isaiah had been with him throughout the Fallen's rebellion. He'd have valuable insight into this shit with Ophion, even if his advice was to stay the fuck out of it.
What's wrong? Isaiah asked.
Hunt shook his head. His friend was too good at reading him.
Nothing. He scrambled for another truth. It's weird to think that 2 weeks without Bryce is a punishment. If I so much as blinked at Sandriel the wrong way, she pulled out my feathers one by one.
Isaiah shivered.
I remember.
His friend had been the one to bandage his ravaged wings again and again, after all.
You like working for her? Celestina, I mean.
Isaiah didn't hesitate.
Yes, a great deal.
Hunt blew out a long breath. He couldn't tell Isaiah, or Naomi, because if they knew, even if they agreed to keep the shit with the rebels secret and stay out of it, they'd be killed too. As it was, they might be tortured a little, but it had become clear they knew nothing, and they might stand a chance.
You know you can talk to me about anything, right?
Isaiah asked. Kindness shone in his dark eyes.
Even stuff with Celestina. I know it's weird with the rankings between us, but I'm the middleman between the 33rd and her. Whatever you need, I'm here.
He'd never really deserved a friend like Isaiah.
It's not weird with the rankings between us, he said. You're the leader of the 33rd. I'm happy to work for you.
Isaiah studied him. I'm not the one who wields lightning, or the one with a fancy nickname. Hunt waved off the weight of what his friend had said.
Trust me, I'd rather you be in charge.
Isaiah nodded, but before he could reply, silence rippled through the cafeteria. Hunt looked up on instinct, past all the wings and armor.
Great,
he muttered. Baxian, tray in hand, walked toward them, ignored the soldiers who gave him a wide berth or fell silent entirely as he passed by.
Play nice,
Isaiah murmured back, and made a show of beckoning the male over. Not for Baxian's sake, but for that of all the people witnessing this, the soldiers who needed to be presented with a unified leadership. Hunt finished off his sandwich just as the shape-shifting angel slid into a chair beside Isaiah. Hunt met his stare.
How'd it go with the hind?
He knew the male could read between his words.
Did you talk, you fucker? Fine. I know how to handle Lydia. No, I didn't, you asshole.
Hunt found Isaiah watching them with raised brows.
What happened with Lydia?
The hellhound answered smoothly.
She wanted to grill me about why I left last night. I didn't feel like explaining to her that I'm Athalar's understudy, and where he goes, I go.
Isaiah's eyes darkened.
You weren't so antagonistic toward her under Sandriel's rule.
Baxian dug into his platter of lamb kofta and herbed rice.
You've been in Lunathian for a while, Tiberian. Things changed after you left.
Isaiah asked,
like what?
Baxian gazed toward the glistening city roasting in the midday heat.
Things. I think that means we should mind our own fucking business, Hunt said.
Isaiah snickered. He's taking a page out of your book, Hunt. Hunt grinned.
You're confusing me with Naomi. I at least will tell you straight up to mind your own business. She'll only imply it.
With a death glare.
And maybe a gun set on the table for emphasis.
They laughed, but Hunt sobered as he noted Baxian observing their volley, something like envy on his face. Isaiah noted it too, because he said to the hellhound,
You can laugh, you know. We do that kind of stuff here.
Baxian's mouth pressed into a thin line.
You've had more than 10 years here. Forgive me if it takes a while to forget the rules of Sandriel's territory.
As long as you don't forget that you're in Lunathian now. The threat of violence rumbled in Isaiah's every word, belying the impeccable suit he wore. That scar Athalar put on your neck will be nothing compared to what I do to you if you hurt anyone in this city. Baxian's eyes glittered.
Just because you weren't interesting enough to merit being part of Sandriel's triori, don't take it out on me with bullshit threats.
Isaiah's teeth gleamed. I had no interest in getting that close to a monster. Hunt tried not to gape. He'd seen Isaiah lay down the law countless times. His friend wouldn't have gotten to where he was without the ability to draw a line and hold it. But it was rare these days to see that vicious warrior shine through. Soldiers were turning their way. So Hunt cut in.
Sandriel would be thrilled to know that she's still pitting us against each other all these years later.
Isaiah blinked, as if surprised he'd tried to intervene. Baxian watched him cautiously. Hunt took another deep breath.
Fuck, that sounded preachy.
Baxian let out a snort, and the tension dissolved. Isaiah threw Hunt a grateful smile, then rose.
I need to head out. I have a meeting with the Oxheads.
Hunt winked.
Give Rune my love.
Isaiah laughed. Will do. With that, his friend strode off toward the trash receptacles. Angels lifted their heads as he passed. A few waved at him. The white-winged angel waved back, pausing at various tables to swap pleasantries. Isaiah's smile was wide, genuine. Baxian said quietly,
Your friend was born for this.
Hunt grunted his agreement.
No interest in leading again?
Baxian asked.
Too much paperwork.
Baxian smirked.
Sure. What's that supposed to mean?
You led once and it went poorly. I don't blame you for not stepping up again. Hunt clenched his jaw but said nothing else as he finished off his meal. Baxian was right on his heels as they strode to empty their plates and dump their trays. Hunt didn't dare turn to tell the hellhound to back the fuck off, not with so many eyes on them. He could hear soldiers whispering as they passed. Hunt didn't bother to engage as Isaiah had. He couldn't bear to look at the other soldiers, the people who'd be summoned to fight against Ophion. People he'd kill if they threatened Bryce. Fuck, if he replicated what he'd done at the Bone Quarter, he could fry them all in a second. No wonder the Asteri had considered the Thunderbirds a threat. That kind of power was nothing short of lethal. If Ophion got their hands on Emil? Yeah, that was a weapon to kill for. Hunt reached the elevator bay beyond the doors. The five angels clustered there quickly aimed for the stairs.
Tough crowd, huh?
Baxian said behind him, as Hunt stepped into the elevator. To his displeasure, the hellhound got in with him. The space was wide enough to accommodate many beings with wings, but Hunt kept his tucked in tight.
You get used to it,
Hunt said, pushing the button for the Triari's barracks. He might as well assess his room to see what weapons he had left, what clothes he needed to send for. Knowing Bryce, she'd send him a pair of her underwear along with them.
I thought you were Mr. Popular,
Baxian said, watching the rising numbers above them.
What the fuck would make you think that?
Hunt didn't wait for a reply as the elevator doors opened and he stepped into the quiet hall.
You seem friendly with everyone outside this place.
Hunt arched a brow, pausing outside his old room.
What does that mean?
Baxian leaned against his own door, across from Hunt's.
I mean, I hear you party with Prince Rune and his friends. You have a girlfriend. You seem to be on good terms with the wolves.
But not the angels?
Isaiah and I are on good terms.
And Naomi.
I mean the others, the grunts. No friends there. Why the hell do you care?
Baxian casually pulled in his wings.
I want to know what's in it for me. What kind of life I can look forward to. It's what you make of it,
Hunt said, opening his door. Stale, dusty air greeted him, a far cry from the scent of coffee that filled Bryce's apartment. He peered over a shoulder to find Baxian surveying his room, the emptiness of it. A peek into Baxian's room across the hall revealed an identically empty space. Hunt said,
That's what my life was like, you know. Like what? Vacant. Then what happened? Bryce happened.
Baxian smiled slightly. Sadly. Was it possible the Hellhound was lonely?
I'm sorry you have to stay apart from her for so long.
Baxian sounded like he meant it. Hunt's eyes narrowed.
Did Celestina punish you? No. She said it was your bad influence, so it was your punishment to take.
Hunt chuckled.
Fair enough.
He stepped into his room and made quick work of assessing his weapons and clothes. When he reemerged into the hallway, Baxian was sitting at the pine desk in his room, going over what appeared to be reports. Every instinct screamed at Hunt to walk out and not say anything. To hell with this male who'd been more of an enemy than a friend over the years. But Hunt braced a hand on the door jamb.
What do they have you working on? Progress reports for the new recruits, seeing if there are any promising angels to pull up through the ranks. Are there? No. Angels like us don't come around that often, I guess.
Apparently not. Baxian went back to his paperwork. The quiet of the hall, the room, settled on Hunt, pushed on him. He could hear Bryce saying, Come on, try. It won't kill you. She bossed him around even in his imagination. So Hunt said,
We've still got 20 minutes left of lunch. Want to play some SUL sunball?
Baxian turned. What's that?
You really don't know anything about modern life, huh?
Baxian gave him a flat look.
SUL, Hunt explained. Sunball United League. It's their video game. You can play from the point of view of any player on any team. It's fun. I've never played a video game.
Oh, I know, Hunt grinned. Baxian surveyed him, and Hunt waited for the rejection, but Baxian said,
Sure, why not?
Hunt headed for the common room.
You might regret that in a few.
Indeed, 10 minutes later, Baxian was cursing, fingers stumbling over the controller clenched in his hands. Hunt nimbly dodged Baxian's avatar.
Pathetic,
Hunt said,
even worse than I thought.
Baxian growled.
This is so stupid. And yet you keep playing,
Hunt countered. Baxian laughed.
Yeah, I guess I do.
Hunt scored.
It's not even satisfying playing against a novice. Give me a day and I'll wipe the floor with you, Athala.
Baxian's thumbs flicked the controls. His avatar ran right into a goalpost and rebounded, sprawling onto the grass. Hunt snickered.
Maybe 2 days.
Baxian glanced at him sidelong.
Maybe.
They kept playing, and when the clock above the door read 12, Baxian asked,
Time to work?
Hunt listened to the quiet dorm around them.
I won't tell if you don't. Didn't I prove this morning that I'm the soul of discretion? I'm still waiting for your motive, you know. I'm not here to make an enemy of you. I don't get why.
Baxian ran into the goalpost again, his avatar ricocheting onto the field.
Life's too short to hold grudges. That's not a good enough reason.
It's the only one you'll get.
Baxian managed to gain control of the ball for all of 10 seconds before Hunt took it from him. He cursed.
Solus, you can't go easy on me.
Hunt let the subject drop. The gods knew he'd had plenty he hadn't wanted to talk about when he first arrived here. And the gods knew he'd done plenty of terrible shit on Sandriel's orders, too. Maybe he should take his own advice from earlier. Maybe it was time to stop letting Sandriel's specter haunt them. So Hunt smiled roughly.
Where would the fun be in that?
This sucks, Bryce muttered into the phone that night, splayed out on her bed. You really aren't allowed to leave?
Only for official 33rd work, Hunt said. I forgot how crappy the barracks are.
Your sad little room with its lack of posters. His laugh rumbled in her ear.
I'm going to be extra good, so she'll let me go early.
I won't have anyone to watch Beach House hook up with. You sure I can't come over there?
Not with Pollux and the Hind here. No fucking way.
Bryce toyed with the hem of her t-shirt. Even if we stayed in your room?
Oh.
His voice dropped low, getting the gist of what she was suggesting.
To do what?
She smiled to herself. She needed this after the insanity of today. She hadn't even dared tell Hunt what had happened with the mystics, not over the phone, where anyone could listen in. But the next time she saw him face to face, she'd tell him about everything. Including the otter Therian had sent to her 2 hours ago, as promised, with a note that said, "Forgive me yet, Legs? Shall we kiss and make up?" She laughed, but sent a note back with the screamingly cute otter, "Start with kissing my ass, and we'll see how it goes." Another otter had arrived before 10, with a note that said, "With pleasure." Now Bryce said to Hunt, mood significantly lifted despite the news.
Things?
His wings rustled in the background.
What kind of things?
Her toes curled. Kissing and more.
Explain what more means.
She bit her lip.
Licking?
His laugh was like dark velvet.
Where would you like me to lick you, Quinlan?
They were doing this then. Her blood heated. Syrinx must have scented what was up and took it upon himself to leap off the bed and head into the living room. Bryce swallowed.
My breasts.
They are delicious.
She slickened between her thighs and rubbed her legs together, nestling further into the pillows.
You like to taste them?
I like to taste all of you.
She could barely get a breath down.
I like to taste you and touch you. And when I can leave these barracks again, I'm going to fly in a straight line to wherever you are so I can thoroughly fuck you.
She whispered.
Are you